Blog Talk Radio.
I got a fun one for you today. Forget about it. That's my super Italian guy accent? Impression? Impression. That's the word I'm looking for. Forget about it. I got a great show for you today. I'm Italian-American, but my Italian accent is just an absolute disaster. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about how much the media sucks in just a second. They're bad. I have some numbers on that for you. So it's an important story. And then I tell you how, at the end of it all, I'm the savior who rides in on a white horse. I have the lunatic right-wing radio host Michael Savage is at it again. He has some brilliant thoughts about Obama. I spoke about this a while ago. I don't know what it was, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. I did a segment where I ranked the worst right-wing radio hosts. Michael Savage was number one. Think about the people he's beating out there. I mean, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh. The list was so crazy that Bill O'Reilly didn't even make it. I'm not kidding. Isn't that insane? Like, there are so many people out there are so fucking crazy on the right that Bill O'Reilly didn't even make the goddamn list. And I still think Michael Savage is holding down that number one position, man. It looks like that's what he's doing. The stuff he says is just unreal. All right, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And then I got a lot of stuff on drugs today. Apparently I got drugs on the mind because I'm overflowing with drug stories. And one of the important ones today is a new way to treat drug addiction is perhaps giving the person who's the addict a little bit of that drug in a clinical setting. I know people fucking lose their minds when you say that because they think, oh, what are you doing? You're giving in and reflects badly on your character and there's no way that you can have a little bit if you're an addict and blah, 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 blah. Well, science is now starting to disagree with the people who are in favor of abstinence when it comes to the substances. But there are obviously important hedges and important caveats there, so we'll talk about that. All right, let's go ahead and get started here. And I want to kick it off with the story on media because it touches home. It's very personal. Okay, here we go. There's a new Gallup poll out, and trust in media is at an all-time low. That's literal. It is an all-time low. So The Hill reports, Americans' trust and confidence in the mass media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly has dropped to its lowest level in Gallup polling history, with 32% saying they have a great deal or fair amount of trust in the media, Gallup analyst Art Swift said. So just 32% trust the media. 32%. Meaning the overwhelming majority of the American people are like, fuck no, I don't trust that shit. So this is down 8 percentage points from last year. That's amazing. Gallup's research on the subject of trust in media began in 1972. The number of Americans expressing such trust has decreased steadily in recent years, going below a majority level and staying there since 2007. So the trends are consistently down, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop. It doesn't look like it's going to even bottom out. Never mind fucking rebound and get above 50% somehow magically. Quote, over the history of the entire trend, Americans' trust and confidence hit its highest point in 1976 at 72% in the wake of widely lauded examples of investigative journalism regarding Vietnam and the Watergate scandal. Okay, now that's the really key important fact there that I need you to think about for a second. When Americans said, I trust the media the most, what was going on? Well, they just told you. There was the investigative journalism in Vietnam and the Watergate scandal. So the media at the time was the most adversarial it had ever been. I mean, the investigative reporting on Vietnam, it was amazing, guys, to the point where if you look at how they covered the Iraq War was super-duper sanitized for everybody here in the U.S. You didn't get those, you know, recordings of, hey, here's a village being blown up. Hey, here are, you know, people on the ground with cameras going around, you know, whatever, talking to families in Iraq who've had their lives destroyed by the war, talking to different people who are part of this militia or that militia. We didn't get that. In fact, Bush made it so that we couldn't even see the flag-draped coffins of our soldiers coming back from Iraq. Virtual media silence on it. I mean, it's amazing. Now, in the Vietnam War, it was the exact opposite. There were journalists everywhere. This is why there's incredible footage of Vietnam. In fact, you know, sometimes like the History Channel will play it today, all these documentaries and stuff, or just play that footage, and you really get to see what war is actually like. And so what happened is people were sitting at home, and they would see this on the news, and they'd be like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, this is like a real war going on. This is like, you know, us versus the Viet Cong, and oh my goodness, you know, eventually we got the Pentagon Papers leaked, and we learned that we use Agent Orange and napalm, and we were massacring civilians, and that was the point in many respects. So when journalism was most respected was when they were doing the most work they had ever done, and they were the most adversarial against the government, where they said, okay, no, I see what your official line is, government, but guess what? I just spoke to somebody on the ground over here, and they're saying the exact opposite of what you're saying, and we have it on video that indeed you did bomb a village and you did do X, Y, and Z. So most adversarial. Again, Watergate. I mean, just up the ass of the Nixon administration. You had, a media that did not take shit. They were looking for the facts. They were looking for the information and the data, and they were going to give it to the American people come hell or high water. That's what the whole point was. Now, compare that to what we got going on today. I've never seen a worse media in my entire life. I mean, the mainstream media is a fucking joke. It's a joke. So when you look at Fox News, let's take Fox News as just one example here. Don't worry, I'll rip on MSNBC too in a second. But Fox News is the Republican propaganda arm. That's what they are. They are the media outlet of the Republican Party. Period. That's it. Sure, there's a spectrum in there. Some people are more pro-Republican Party, and some are more just pro-conservative values in general. But, you know, that's basically the whole point of Fox News is Republican propaganda. MSNBC, not liberalism, not progressivism. That's not what they represent. What do they represent? The Democratic Party. So when the party gets massively corporatist, whoop, look at that. All of a sudden you have apologists and defenders on MSNBC. You know, Rachel Maddow, who seemingly was a good liberal, now all of a sudden HRC can do no wrong because HRC is the nominee. And HRC is massively corporatist, of course. So you have one network that's the Republican propaganda arm, one network that's the Democratic propaganda arm. Okay, no wonder the American people are like, something smells fishy. I don't like the media right now. What's going on? They know they're being lied to. They know they're being lied to. Now, in step, you know, CNN, all the different nightly news programs, they're horrific too in their own way. So if MSNBC and Fox News represent the parties, what do the other networks represent? They represent the establishment. So that's why you get the false neutrality from those networks, because they're trying their best to represent both parties. So what they'll do is, if there's a relevant story involving politics, they'll go to one party and say, "Okay, DNC, what do you say about this scandal? Okay, here's our written statement. Got it. RNC, what's your response? Okay, here's your written statement. Got it." Then you have some fucking bobblehead like Wolf Blitzer, who's got an IQ of negative 13, go on air and he reads both of them. "Well, the DNC says blah blah blah, the RNC says blah blah blah, and I leave it up to you, the American people, to decide which is right. All right, moving on to the next story. Man, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. Am I right? So you have a sensationalism bias, anything to get eyeballs that's not substantive, hence the Kim Kardashian shit and all that other nonsense. And you have the establishment bias and the neutrality bias, which are basically linked, which is, okay, we're going to represent the establishment also because we want access, and also because we don't want to offend anybody, so we'll give the Republican side, the Democratic side, and always call it 50-50 no matter what. So the American people can smell this from a mile away, because it's gotten, honestly, it's basically a caricature of itself at this point. When you have on Bill Nye the Science Guy and Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn to debate climate change, and one person's position is it's a hoax, and the other one is like, wait, no, I'm the science guy. I know it's not." And they just present it like 50-50, what are you going to do? Okay, it wasn't that long ago. People forget this. It was in like 2008, 2009. CNN would still have people on. "Okay, you're going to debate the evolution side. You're going to debate the intelligent design side. Go." When your false balance is so bad that you can't take the most obvious thing, I mean, you might as well have somebody out there, "All right, you're going to do the reproduction debate. You're going to say that, women get pregnant. You're going to say that it's the stork." Like, that's close to what you're fucking doing at that point. It's close to, okay, flat earth, you take the flat earth position. This is what's going on. But it's like this with everything. And so what's dead? What's sacrificed? What's not even considered on any of the main networks? Truth, objectivity. This is why the numbers are going so low. Because it's so obvious that the system is broken. It's just so beyond clear. So now, hopefully, what I'm trying to do, what others are trying to do, what many in new media are trying to do, is revive journalism. Now, I don't lie to you guys and say I don't have an opinion. Everybody knows I have an opinion. That's obvious. But I try to give you the facts, the data, the information, and then give you my take on it. I try to not just, "Okay, here's my take." I try to get, "Okay, here's the data, and then let me explain my take, and you know when I'm giving you my take, and you know what actually is the data." I mean, this isn't a thing. There's nothing that's genuine. There's nothing that's real. There's nothing that's even an attempt to get at truth in mainstream media, which is why, these numbers are tanking. And I don't see them rebounding unless, of course, you give new media more time to surpass, which I think eventually we will completely, these networks in numbers. And we're already beating, for example, some midday shows on CNN. Not that that's anything to brag about, but our daily numbers versus their midday numbers. So you just got to give new media some more time. And also, by the way, I want to be clear about something. Everything that I'm saying right now, this in fact does not apply to print outlets, because print outlets do a superb job. That's how I get my information for this show. I mean, there's a lot of outlets online that, and there's so many of them that it's hard for any individual site to get so much traffic, because the internet is gigantic and you have a bunch of sites that are actually doing good print work. So I want to give credit to them and let them know you're exempt from all my criticism. My criticism is geared towards, the main networks on TV, basically. But unfortunately, still a decent number of people, when you combine them all together, all the different networks, they get their information from TV. Well, we're trying to bust that up, and we're trying to let people know, all right, we know you don't trust them, and you're right to not trust them. But give us a shot, because I guarantee you I'm going to do my best day in and day out to be as accurate and objective as possible. I'm not going to toe a party line, and I'm not going to do false balance, and I'm not going to care about neutrality over objectivity. We care about objectivity first, which is facts above all else. Let's move on to Hillary Clinton. I have quite a sad story for you here about Hillary Clinton, the Hill explains for us. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton's newest book sold fewer than 3,000 copies in its first week on sale. The book titled Stronger Together outlines policies Clinton would pursue if she were elected president. According to the Times, a book's first week sales normally make up about a third of the total sold. The book features a photo of Clinton and her running mate, Senator Tim Kaine, on the cover and labels it a blueprint for America's future. It gives readers, quote, specific and practical solutions while also articulating a bold and expansive vision of change and renewal, and it runs about 250 pages. Okay, I need everybody to understand just how sad this actually is. They're saying that represents a third of the total sales, roughly speaking. So whatever you sell in your first week, that's about a third of what you're going to sell the entire time your book is out there. She just sold 3,000. You do the math. You're going to sell 9,000 books? And you're running for president. 9,000? Below me right now. What's that number you got there with subscribers on YouTube that I have? If I decided, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book, and guys, it'll be out in a year, and I plug it a few times. Nothing crazy, but every now and then, oh, by the way, I have a book coming out on X, Y, and Z, and it'll come out this day. I guarantee you I'd sell more than 3,000 books in the first week. And I'm not a fucking A-list celebrity. I'm not a B-list celebrity. I'm not a C-list celebrity. She's supposedly an A-list celebrity running for fucking president. You're going to only sell 3,000 books. Okay, no, but you have to understand. People say, okay, Kyle, you're taking this too far. This isn't that big a deal. No, it is. Because what it shows you is it's window dressing, man. This idea, this facade of Hillary Clinton as like, oh, Hillary, you're just so amazing and special. Okay, no. She coasted off of her name recognition from being first lady, then being senator from New York, then being secretary of state. So people vaguely, oh, yeah, I know who she is, you know. And then it, just based off that and Democratic loyalists who just kind of, you know, blindly, okay, I'm voting down the line Democrat, let's move along here. Just based off that, she was able to beat, you know, a 1,000-year-old Jewish, maybe atheist, Democratic socialist senator from Vermont who like 8 people knew. And he still got, what, 46, 47% of the vote thereabouts? Ooh, wow! So the more they learned about you and the more they heard you speak, the less they liked you. The more they learned about him, the more they liked him. So it's all a fucking – it's smoke and mirrors. This idea of her is like, oh, my God, she's so much support. Oh, there's so much support. There's no doubt that there's an enthusiasm gap here. And obviously Trump supporters, while – I mean – technically and literally, according to the polls, they are fewer in number. The ones that are supporters of Trump are way more enthusiastic about it. People are like, yeah, Hillary, whatever. Anyway, what's for dinner? With Trump, Trump. With Bernie Sanders, oh, please, don't even get me started. There were stories of people literally fainting at his rallies. So with Hillary, you're running for president, and you sell 3,000 books when you release a book. I'm telling you, man, all these little things add up, and I haven't even touched, although I did yesterday, and I talk about it all the time, how they tipped the scales against Bernie in the primary. The DNC did, Hillary Clinton did, so on and so forth. You're only going to sell 3,000 copies of your book. These are all red flags, man. And you know what it is? The thing about Hillary Clinton is you can smell the insincerity from miles away. I mean, she's running as a 1980s style politician in the year 2016. That's what it is. Like, when she gives a speech, you can see, okay, not that I never care, oh my God, Obama's using a teleprompter, the argument that the people on the right used to make. That doesn't mean anything. But how you deliver your speech, your rhythm, your cadence, what you're saying, that all does matter because that all does affect people in a certain way. You know when somebody's connecting with you and when they're not connecting with you. When I deliver a story here, as I do all the time, and I'm going through the parts of the story that I'm quoting from the article, there's some you got to focus more to carry along. When I'm just talking to you like I'm talking right now, it's easier to follow along because I'm connecting with you as opposed to just fucking robotically reading something. With Hillary Clinton, there's that permanent fucking barrier between you and her where she's talking, but she's talking at you, and she's going through the motions, but there's no fucking connection there. There's no there. There's no I care about the substance, I care about the people, I care about these policies. And that's why most of the time in the primary, let me give you vague, you know, policy positions, not even policy positions. Let me just give you, you know, platitudes and cliches and generalities. And it was never, like Bernie said, all right, we need to raise the marginal tax rate to 52% on people making above $1 million a year. Like, it was always specific, and he cared about it. Hillary, okay, we need to be, like, stronger together and whatnot, and let's go ahead and break down those barriers, because there's a lot of barriers. What are you saying? It's just you're fucking just platitudes, one after the other. And this is why millennials look at you, and they're like, I'm supposed to vote for her? I know she doesn't give a fuck about this. I know she doesn't. That's why the book's fucking name is Stronger Together, A Blueprint for America's Future. Come on, man. Come on. You got to do better. You got to do better. And again, so people look at her and they see the old-timey, old-school politician. They see the person who's going through the motions, and it is Kabuki theater. I am a politician, and I care about you, I promise. And here I am going to do the politician point like this, where I don't point at you, but I do this, and it's even rehearsed my fucking hand motions. Oh, God, stop it. Stop it. And this is why you only sold fucking 3,000 books as you're running for president. It's just, it's disastrous. It's pathetic. There's no enthusiasm. And don't you dare for a second try to blame anybody else but Hillary Clinton. Don't. But. It's her goddamn fault, okay? It's her fault. It's her fault because also, let's face it, there are many of her detractors know. You got the Clinton Foundation, you got pay to play, you got corruption, you got her and Bill taking over $3 billion in their careers from all different special interests, and that includes the Clinton Foundation, that includes to the their super PACs, that includes to their campaigns, that includes directly into their pocket in the form of speeches that she gives to, like, Goldman Sachs as she pretends like she's against Wall Street. So people look at it, they go, yeah, stop. This kind of politics is eventually going to die because millennials are saying, fuck off, no more. Polls came out this morning. Only 52% of Bernie supporters are going to vote for Hillary as of right now. 52%, man. That's not a thing. Like, in the past, okay, your Democratic candidate lost, you go to the other Democratic candidate. There is a specific dislike for this one. That number is really low, 52%. 36% are going to vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein when you talk about the millennial Bernie supporters. But, you know, I'm done with HRC. Forget that. So this is a kind of politician and a kind of politics that's going to die. And, you know, I was talking about this the other night, not to link in something totally unrelated, even though that's exactly what I'm going to do, but, like, I was watching, Keith Olbermann is out with this new show, and he's doing, like, it's called The Closer, and it's on GQ, their YouTube channel. Now, it's also hilarious that at one point he ended up ripping the Young Turks because, you know, they went back online. They've always kind of been online. That's their home. He was, like, mocking them when they did that after they left Current. And now, where's Keith? Oh, that's right, he's online. Because online was the future, and it is the future. So he's doing this show, and I remember back in, you know, the early 2000s when he's railing against Bush on TV, he was a lone voice in the wilderness that was somewhat liberal, and his voice was crucial. Because he's out there, you know, talking against the Iraq war, he's saying this, he's saying that, he's no holds barred. And you're like, oh my God, this is great. Finally, somebody saying, you know, the war's bad, when it was just wall-to-wall positive coverage for the longest time. So his voice was super important then. Today, I watched some of his show last night. It's just stale, and it's partisan, and it's, you know, it's that old-timey thing. And that old-timey thing is going away, man. And this is no disrespect for Keith, because, again, there was a time his voice was super important. But you just get the sense of, like, it's dying. The stream of consciousness talking that actually Trump does pretty well, that's the new thing. Like, that's the new kind of thing that resonates. Back in the day, it used to be I'm Ronald Reagan and I'm reading shit. Flowery words and rhetoric. Today, if you try to speak like that, people are like, what is that guy doing? Why is he talking like that? What's he saying? Why is he saying that? What's he doing? He's like a fucking, he's a bad actor is what it is, which he literally was in the case of Ronald Reagan. That doesn't fly anymore, man. So, like Keith Olbermann, you're reading off a prompter, you're going through the motions, you know, like he is with his new show, just like he did his old show. People are like, I don't know about that. And also, let's face it, back in the day, it was the case that he was being a Dem partisan in 2005 wasn't a horrible thing because you were doing that specifically to fight against Bush and Cheney's neoconservatism. So there was a rationale to being a Dem partisan back then. If you're a Dem partisan in 2016, you're actually more in defense of neoconservatism because Hillary's kind of like a neocon. So there's also that substantive difference. And he also was, you know, kind of anti-Bernie in the primary, which shows something about the kind of liberal you supposedly are. So there's those problems too, but just in the style and the delivery, he has issues now, just like HRC has issues now, and that kind of politician is going away because millennials can't stand it, and they're right to not stand it. And apparently even people in general now are kind of having trouble digesting it, which is why Hillary only sold 3,000 copies of her book when she's supposed to be selling probably, what, hundreds of thousands? Beyond pathetic. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, lunatic right-wing radio host Michael Savage. Don't miss it. We'll be right back, guys.
Oh.
Son of a bitch. All right, I'm back. I'm with you. Next. Okay, Michael Savage. Oh, this guy is so crazy. Lunatic right-wing radio host Michael Savage is at it again, and he has some new brilliant thoughts for us on President Obama.
Ask yourself why this monster in the White House, the most deceitful, hateful, and power-hungry man in American political history, ask yourself why, of all the Syrians he has brought in, 99.6% are Muslims and only 0.4% are Christians, while a genocide is being conducted against not Muslims but Christians in the Middle East. Because he is transforming America into part of the caliphate. He is the new leader of the caliphate. He is the most deceitful new leader of a caliphate imaginable.
What? He's the leader of the caliphate? You don't even believe that. What are you saying? Okay, you know, a while ago it occurred to me that these guys on the far right, these radio hosts, Rush Limbaugh, you know, Michael Savage, Glenn Beck, when they talk, the goal isn't even to try to get at truth, to try to say things that are accurate. Long ago, they were like, that's inconvenient, that gets in the way of my narrative, so that's what's going to happen is I'm only going to focus on my narrative. And any argument you can come up with, no matter how insane it is, I will use it if it's against Democrats. So what does he do? Obama's a caliphate. He's the leader of the caliphate. He's the leader of the caliphate. Obama's the leader of the caliphate. Obama is the leader of the caliphate. I don't even know where to begin with this. Okay, you guys do know that it wasn't that long ago you were ripping Obama because he dared to sit in Reverend Wright's church. Which is it? Is he a Muslim and the leader of the caliphate? Or is he a Christian and how dare you attend that terrible church? Which is, it can't be both. But no, see, again, logic isn't a thing to them. So they don't care. They'll say it all at once. And then they'll go further and say, he's a communist atheist. He's an atheist Muslim Christian. This is what Obama is. Which one is convenient to my argument at the moment? Okay, that's the one that he is. Forget that I said the other ones, or don't forget that I said the other ones, but you're not allowed to use logic. You're not allowed to say it's got to be one or the other, even though it literally has to be one or the other. It's all of them. It's all of them. He's a radical Christian, Muslim, leader of the caliphate, atheist, communist. That's what he is. I said it. I said it. And then the hilarious thing is they portray it and they pose it like they're the straight shooters. Like he says it in this way. As if it's like, well, obviously, if you disagree with me, you're an idiot. Not so sure about that, Mikey boy. Not so sure about that. You want to talk about idiots? Let me give you this thing called a mirror, and you can look in it a little bit. And then also, guys, don't you dare for a second buy into the other things that he says there. Like, it's not like the other parts are facts, and then he gets to the crazy shit where he says, Obama's the leader of the caliphate. No, the other stuff is made up, too. So this idea of, like, I know that 99.6% of the people coming from Syria are Muslim. Well, first of all, if that were the case, which, again, I don't believe because it's Michael Savage saying it, maybe that would have something to do with the fact that Syria is overwhelmingly Muslim. Like, what do you want them to do? Take 80% Christians from an area that has so few Christians? But, again, I don't even believe the numbers because he's liable to make that up also. 99.6%. And by the way, we know, as a matter of fact, something that these guys would never admit to. The overwhelming majority of the Muslim refugees we take in, women and children. In fact, it's so disproportionate that I look at it and I go, ooh. Like, I get why you would be more concerned about young males, but you're taking so few young males that it is kind of fucked up. So they would never acknowledge that, and they would never acknowledge the insane, I actually mean that in a good way in this sense, rigorous vetting process. And we've covered all the details. There's so many different government agencies that get involved. They do something called biometric screening, which I don't even know what the fuck that is. There's actually some decent records in some of these places, Syria, for example. So they actually do a really thorough vetting before they let somebody in or not. And also, he says he's the leader of the caliphate. Michael, Fucking Germany's let in, what, at least a million refugees. I think maybe over 2 million refugees, different places in Europe, millions upon millions of refugees, to the point where I get it. It's not bigoted on their part if they say, dude, we just don't have the resources for anymore. So I get that. Millions they've taken in. How many have we taken in? I'm not kidding. 10,000.
I don't care. That makes Obama the leader of the caliphate. The leader of the caliphate. That's what he is. Leader of the caliphate.
These are just stupid people. Like, at what point, I want to be kind, I want to be fair, but at what point can you listen to some moron go on and go, oh, you're a crazy person. That's what you are. Like, there's not, this isn't working right. Your brain is broken. Something's off. You don't give a fuck about data or facts or truth or information. You just want to be unhinged and rail against the president, who at times you've argued is a communist atheist, at times you've argued is a radical Christian for sitting in Reverend Rice Church, and at times Muslim, but not only a Muslim, the head of the fucking caliphate. Just remember Louis Gohmert, what did he say? Obama's trying to resurrect the Ottoman Empire. Louis Gohmert probably doesn't even know what the fucking Ottoman Empire is. He probably doesn't even know what it is. He's like, Obama's resurrecting it and leading it. There are no words for how much that doesn't make sense. It breaks the don't make sense meter. And that's what we're dealing with these fools on the far right. Okay, now, Glenn Beck. I go from one idiot to another. Glenn Beck apparently knows how God wants you to vote. Let's listen.
We're the dumbest people alive.
You are.
We are the people that we used to make fun of when we read the Bible.
Huh?
All they have to do is go back 3 pages. How did the people miss all of this? 3 pages before, they were saying we're wide awake. Now, 2 pages later, they're being destroyed because they're doing all the stuff that happened 4 pages before that. How did they miss it? We're those people. We're those people. But the good news is, this time, I think, a remnant. And this is one of the reasons why I cannot vote for Donald Trump. I read a great quote from somebody who said, it is immoral in America not to vote, but people are engaging in, and this was said in the 70s, voting for the person that is the lesser of two evils. Evil is evil, and if it's not, don't call it or label it evil. But the lesser of two evils, do not vote for those. Have more faith in God that a righteous people will select something else and God will make up for the difference, and if it doesn't work out, he will protect a righteous people. I can't vote for evil, what I think is evil, or the lesser of two evils. I can't vote for the destruction of freedom, and I do believe that's what we would be voting for. And so I trust in the Almighty. I trust in the protection of divine providence. But the only way you get divine providence is if you deserve it.
There are a million reasons to vote third party. I'm voting third party in New York. Yahweh is not one of the reasons to vote third party. Leave it to Glenn Beck to come up with the single most ridiculous reason why I can't vote for one of these two candidates. Really, why is that, Glenn? God! God only shines his light down on those who pick ones that are not evil. Okay, can you make a fucking policy argument? Jesus Christ, can you make a policy argument? But no, he can't. You want to know why he can't? Because
you and I maybe agree with him saying, I'm not going to vote for either one of these two candidates. You know which candidate he preferred, right? Ted Cruz. I mean, this dude lost it in his pants over Ted Cruz. He needed a change of pants every 2 or 3 hours. He's like, oh, fuck, Ted's around. I'm all gooey again. God, that's so gross. Why do I say these things? Why do I say these things? So he campaigned for him all over the place. He couldn't find an area where he disagreed with him. Ted Cruz is even worse than Donald Trump. Ted Cruz is all the insane authoritarianism of Donald Trump mixed in with theocracy. At least with Trump, you're relatively certain he ain't going to give us theocracy because he doesn't look like the most pious religious person on the planet now, does he? So he likes an even worse candidate, and then he goes out there. Look at the shit he said at the beginning. That was unbelievable. He's like, we're the dumbest people on earth. Now let me explain why we were way smarter when we read the Bible and took it literally. I mean, if you look at page 96, you go back to page 92, we're doing the shit that was on page 89. But then we should have done the shit that was on 104. What the fuck are you saying? What are you saying? And, you know, that's really what it comes down to, is he has no logical reason for acting as he's acting. He's a crazy person. He's like, oh, space fairy, Jigglypuff in the sky, please tell me what I should do. What? What is that? Oh, you say I shouldn't be voting for either candidate? Well, gosh golly, okay, I guess I'm not going to vote for either candidate then. Again, I respect it if you vote third party and you have reasons to do it. That's what I'm doing in New York. I'm not in a swing state, so I don't need to have that rigid black and white dichotomy of it's either going to be Trump or Hillary. I get it if you're voting third party. Saying because of God, that's why I'm not going to do it, that doesn't make sense. And when he keeps, the Bible tells us, geez, we're so dumb because we don't follow that anymore. Okay, Glenn, this is the fucking book that has a flat earth, dipshit. They allude multiple times to the earth being flat. You know, they talk about sailing to the four corners of the earth. I wonder what kind of earth would have four corners. They talk about a seven-headed dragon. They talk about a talking snake. They have a man lives inside of a fish. Glenn's like, I miss the days when we followed that book. You may as well follow The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you man-child. I mean, Bible, they talk about how, you know, shellfish are banned. You can't eat shellfish. I'm sure Glenn has had shellfish. They talk about how you can't wear a mix of two different fabrics. How much you want to bet? I bet Glenn right then and there is wearing a mix of two different fabrics. I have no doubt. So he's like, the Bible, we got to follow the Bible again. Oh, whoa, wait, what? Oh, shit. I shaved? You're not allowed to shave. In the Bible, that's an abomination in the eyes of God to shave your face. He shaves his face, does it all the time, bitch. So what are you saying? There's one part in the Bible where, you know, these daughters rape their dad. They drug him and then they rape him. This is the book you want to follow for morality? So the guy is off his fucking rocker. And it's really sad that this is the state of the Never Trump movement. We know how bad the actual Trump movement is. The fucking bobblehead Sean Hannity, who literally doesn't even register his own contradictions in his mind. Like, contradictions aren't a thing to him. There's endless videos of him just taking one position when it's Republicans that have it, and then when it's Democrats that have it, all of a sudden now I'm against it. I'm against it even though I was for it 8 minutes ago. So the pro-Trump people are insane. The anti-Trump, never-Trump Republicans are insane. And also, unfortunately, the Hillary Clinton loyalists are kind of off their rocker, too. What a sad state of affairs. All right, let's get into an interesting story here about mass incarceration. There's a new analysis out on the true cost of mass incarceration in the United States, and it's bad. Matt Ferner reports here, a new study examining the economic toll of mass incarceration in the United States concludes that the full cost exceeds $1 trillion. With about half of that burden falling on the families
children, and communities of people who have been locked up. The United States is the biggest jailer on the planet, with less than 5% of the world's population, but nearly 25% of its prisoners. That's amazing. Another 7 million Americans are either on probation or on parole. Operating all those federal and state prisons, plus running local jails, is generally said to cost the U.S. government about $80 billion a year. But in a first-of-its-kind study, researchers at Washington University in St. Louis found that the $80 billion price tag is likely a gross underestimation because it does not factor in the social costs of incarceration. They found that for every dollar in corrections costs, incarceration generates an additional $10 in social costs. So this basically means that as a result of lost output from economic productivity, as a result of cost in health care and shorter lifespans, and cost of high recidivism, when you add everything up, you're looking at $1 trillion. And also what this doesn't include is the literal cost of the war on drugs over the years. So it's been, we've spent over $1 trillion on that as well. Basically, having a military solution, a violent solution to the issue of drugs. So look at all these ways where we're throwing money at the problem. It's hilarious because when you talk about, hey, I want to do universal education for people, I want to do universal health care for people, what's the first thing anybody says? Can't afford it. How are we going to afford it? 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 But hold on. When you look at education, for example, when you pay for higher ed, it pays for itself and then some, because there are payoffs for that. You know, people get better jobs when they have more education. They make more money. And so this is a net benefit for society. It pays for itself and then some. When you talk about throwing money at a problem like incarceration, and then incarceration becomes mass incarceration, and then you're locking people up for good reasons, bad reasons, no reasons, so on and so forth, when it comes to, you know, drugs, for example, well, there you're actually wasting money. In the same way that with the military-industrial complex, when you, you know, spend millions of dollars to build, you know, this fighter jet or this bomb or whatever the case is, and then you give it to Saudi Arabia and it blows up over Yemen, where are the reverberating benefits of that? There aren't any. You just blew up the thing that you created. Now, for something like education, again, it pays for itself. It pays off. So the things that we're wasting money on, we are literally wasting the money on, as in it doesn't keep cycling around the economy and have positive benefits. When you talk about something like education, it does do that. It does have positive benefits. It does pay off. And so now we know when you tally up all the costs of mass incarceration, you're looking at $1 trillion, man. What a gigantic waste of money and resources and just people. I gave you the numbers. I mean, we have more people in U.S. jails and prisons than Stalin had in his gulags at their height. That's nothing to be proud of. Now, you can either look at that and say, oh, the United States and its citizens are particularly violent compared to the rest of the world. Like, we just are innately, naturally, we have a penchant more for violence. We're just inclined and prone in that direction. Or perhaps we're locking up many of these people unjustly and unnecessarily, and they indeed are not violent, but we lock them up anyway. Which one do you think is more likely? Are you, just by virtue of the fact that you're an American, much more likely to want bloodshed? Blah, yes, I'm American. Fight. I must fight. Is that what you're like? Or is it more likely that, oh, the system we set up and the rules that we set up and the shit that we lock people up for, that doesn't really make all that much sense now, does it? When you lock people up for weed, when you lock people up for selling a little bit of cocaine, when you lock people up for various drug charges, nonviolent offenses, maybe that's the problem. No, that is the problem. We know that's the problem. We have too many innocent people locked up. That's what it comes down to. And now, it's not just a moral argument you make, you know, on our side of it, which I do make a moral argument. You shouldn't be locking that people up because they didn't do anything wrong. But now there's also a fiscal and economic argument that should overwhelm certainly any libertarians, but maybe even some reasonable Republicans, the ones that remain, where you say, okay, come on. Okay, seriously, that's what you want to waste the money on? That's what you want to waste the money on. Locking people up who shouldn't be locked up? $1 trillion. It's just unreal, and it's such a waste, and we need to go in the other direction right now. All right, now I got more stuff here that gets specifically into drugs. I got a few. CNN's Susan Scutty has a fascinating article out explaining how Canada just legalized prescription heroin as a way to deal with severe addiction. Okay, now, full stop. Here's where any Republican, well, that's not fair. Maybe there's a few that would understand it, but many Republicans, many conservatives, they go, nope, I'm out. I tap out. I'm done. This is the craziest thing I've ever fucking heard. You guys are idiots. Next. And, I've experienced this even with people who I consider in my life somewhat reasonable, where, you know, you bring up something like this. It's like, whoa, what do you mean? That's, what? That seems like the problem, not the solution. So, I'll grant you that at face value, you read that and you go, that seems a little weird. You're going to prescribe heroin as the solution when the problem is heroin. What's up with that, dog? Well, let me explain. So, first of all, they say, this isn't the initial attempt and the first route that you go in order to try to help the person and in order to try to make their life better. That's not what you do. There are other things. Okay, you go to methadone, which is a similar acting drug in the way it acts in your brain, or, you know, you can go to Suboxone, or there's a bunch of different options you can take. And sometimes those treatments hold. Sometimes they don't. Now, in the cases where they don't, what do you do? Well, the creative solution that some people came up with is, okay, what's really going on here with a drug addict? Well, with a drug addict, they'll do their drugs, but it's a dangerous environment. So you're on the black market. There could be unscrupulous dealers who cut the drug with all types of dangerous substances for you that are even more dangerous than the drug. You know, you have a high rate of transmission of diseases if people share needles and if people do this stuff in these unsanitary environments. So it's not that the only issue is the drug taking and the potential overdose from just the drug taking. No, it's that there's other issues of crime related with the black market, of health issues and disease spreading as a result of it, and things that the public has an interest in stopping regardless of the drug issue. So what do you do? Well, they say, okay, what if we brought these people into a clinical setting with doctors and experts around? We measure out a dose of the heroin that we know is safe. We know it's pharmaceutical-grade heroin. So again, we know it's safe. It's not going to be cut with any dangerous stuff. There's not going to be crime associated with it because you're not on the black market anymore. So the disease, gone. Disease, gone. The crime, gone. Crime, gone. Just by virtue of the fact that you're doing it this way. An overdose, gone. Why is it gone? Well, you're in a clinical environment. You have the doctors there. You have the experts there. You give the proper amount, which, by the way, even may allow somebody to function in society. Oh, I know. People go, what do you mean? There's no such thing as a functioning heroin addict. Oh, really? Oh, really? You know nothing about drugs if you think that's the case. Of course there is. Of course there is. So you just eliminated all the societal ills, and also you made it so that now the person's on a schedule. So now it's – and this is the same thing with methadone, by the way, and everybody kind of accepts methadone as an acceptable treatment now. Well, again, it works in a similar way that heroin does in your brain and on your body. So people go to the methadone clinic, get their methadone, go about their day. You know, next day come, they do the same thing. What if you just did it with heroin, but it was a lower controlled dose of heroin, it wasn't cut with dangerous stuff, and you eliminate the disease and you eliminate the crime that happens on the black market? That's win-win-win-win-win-win-win-win all around. Now, the only problem people still say is, but they're taking heroin. And? So if it's controlled, like I just described, if the person is still functioning in society and is healthy, like I just described, then what's the counterargument? But I just want them off of heroin. Okay, well, what if you tried everything and they're not off the heroin? Isn't it better to control it and have it in a medicinal sense than to not have it? See, this is the thing. We're stuck in this mode of abstinence thinking when it comes to most substances, honestly. Like, with alcohol, there's been that approach for a long time. AA, just say no. Oh, my God. Drugs, bad, 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 bad. But now, today, people are, they've come up with these new treatments that, okay, so you're an alcoholic. You can't fucking control yourself. The old model is you have to swear off all alcohol no matter what. But again, what if it was more of a clinical setting and you go about it in a way that is healthy because it's controlled and there are experts involved and you can still live a life that is, you know, fruitful and normal and, you know, you just have a more balanced, rigid approach to said thing. Back in the day, that was heresy. But is it really heresy if it works? No, if it actually works, then it works. And again, the only objection one can make is you're breaking this ideal that I made up, which is you never having that thing again. But if that's proven not to work, and the statistics show it, that you're more likely to fall off the wagon and go nuts and ruin your life that way, or as opposed to having little controlled doses in a medicinal setting, well, it should be relatively obvious to people that, oh, the abstinence is not the way to go. It's just not the way to go. It just doesn't work. So, again, people look at this, and, you sense it even in the U.S., but there are places that are already doing this, and it's a massive success because of what I described for you, how you limit the crime, you limit the diseases, you control the doses, so on and so forth. So I think it's a great idea. You guys know me. I would legalize, tax, and regulate all substances. And, you know, this is something that's a little step in the right direction, and it's a little step to, you know, understanding that our approach has been the worst approach and the biggest failure of all the different approaches, and I commend Canada for what they're doing. Okay. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have more people joining the fight against legalization of marijuana. And they're bad people. Stay right there. I'll give you that and much more. All right, I'm back. Okay, still got much more to get to. I'll give you one more on drugs. I'll hold off. I had three drug stories. I'm going to hold off on one of them until tomorrow. All right, but here we go. Interesting story now about cocaine. We go from heroin to cocaine because that's how we roll. That's how we roll on this show. We have quite a report here from The Independent on the current state of street cocaine. They say nearly two-thirds of cocaine is cut with a substance that can rot human flesh, and 80% contains a chemical linked to bladder cancer, a new study has found. Levamisole is supposed to be used by farmers to purge their livestock of parasitic worms. But a study by the addiction treatment website drugabuse.com found that it was present in 65% of street cocaine. This is despite the fact that if ingested in sufficient quantities, levamisole can cause ulcerating skin lesions and rot the skin. Now, I understand if one is a little skeptical about the results of this because it's drugabuse.com that's saying, oh yeah, drugs are bad. Anyway, why don't you come to our rehabs? So I get it, and you're probably right that the numbers are inflated, but it would still be concerning if, let's say, they're way inflated and 5% of the cocaine out there has stuff that is linked, a chemical linked to bladder cancer and stuff that rots human flesh. I mean, we know that's not beyond the realm of possibility. Look at crocodile. Crocodile is the cheap heroin knockoff. That, yes, the way it's made, it makes your fucking skin rot off. It's possible, and it's out there. And the solution is the exact opposite of what many people think it is. So, I mean, look, I don't know. How can anybody read this story and go, you know, I got the answer. We should ban cocaine. Pretty sure it's already banned. So what do? Well, we got to get rid of the one that's the stuff that's cut with the bad stuff. How do you do that? Think. Come on now. Crank those wheels in your brain. Almost there. No, you would have to legalize it, tax it, and regulate it. So when something is legal, all of a sudden it's in the sunlight. When it's in the sunlight, you can have the necessary government body step in and go, you know, we tested that batch. You got an issue. That one's gone. Now you got to, okay, this one's a pure batch. You're all set. Now again, people go, well, then you have the problem of pure cocaine. Yeah, you also have the problem of alcohol. There are still some alcoholics that exist. Does that mean we should ban alcohol for everybody? Why does that reasoning not also land with cocaine? And by the way, according to Dr. Carl Hart, who's an addiction expert, he says about 80% of all drug users are moderate users who live a normal life, go about their business, and they don't get overwhelmed and overtaken by the substance where it ruins them. Now, again, I have sympathy for that other 20%, but the answer for that 20% is rehab. The answer for that 20% is help. The answer is not to ban the substance. So, again, when you have the substance banned, problems like this always come up. Think about it. Back when we had prohibition of alcohol, we had bad batches. Now, why is that? Well, there were bad batches because it was made, tubs, as cheaply as possible, and oftentimes there'd be terrible substances that were part of it, and then you drink a normal amount of alcohol and you die, not from alcohol poisoning, but because it was a bad batch that had substances in it that are going to fucking kill you. Now, when you legalize alcohol, no more bad batches. No more bad batches because it's made properly and it's regulated. Okay, think about Philip Seymour Hoffman and how he passed away. There was speculation that he got a bad batch of heroin. Now, again, you could say heroin is bad in its own right. He got heroin that was laced with fentanyl. Fentanyl is way more powerful than heroin and morphine. And so in the normal batch that you would normally take, the normal amount of heroin you'd normally take, if you take that same amount of fentanyl, you're going to overdose. That's what happened. His was cut with fentanyl, and he overdosed and he died. Now, again, if opiates were legal, and if you had it regulated so you can't cut the product with fentanyl, well, then he wouldn't die. again, I know this is, for some people, this is impossible thinking to grasp, or you're still convinced that there are so many more societal ills that are tied to legalizing it anyway that you wouldn't do it. You got to reconsider, because the evidence does not point in that direction. In fact, it points in the opposite direction. Another reason is when you look at what happened during Prohibition, the mafia got massively powerful. Why did the mafia get massively powerful? Because they had a monopoly on selling the alcohol. By the same token, what's a big problem today? The drug cartels. Drug cartels fucking beheading people, running wild, acting crazy. Yeah, they're powerful because they have a monopoly on the drug market. If you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs, the cartels go away. Because the black market, there's not as much need for the black market anymore now, is there, when you can go to your local CVS and get some kush. So again, I know that it's hard. There's a lot of people stuck in the old way of thinking, and to them it's like a not even a thought they've ever entertained of, like, well, maybe these things should be legal. But there was actually a time in the U.S. when all these drugs were legal. And if you look at the roots of, you know, why they decided to make certain things illegal, it had very little to do with health, bitch. It had to do with criminalizing lifestyles of certain undesirables. So, for example, marijuana wasn't called marijuana back in the day. But they started calling it marijuana, and they associated it with Hispanic immigrants. And they thought, we got to criminalize their way of life and have an excuse to lock them up because we don't like them. So let's just, their drug of choice, banned. Weird, you know, that they're picking on certain groups of people. Opium. You know why they banned opium, right? They were scared, they were afraid that their white daughters would be in the opium den with the Chinese guys and they would have sex. So they're like, we gotta ban it. We gotta ban opium. We don't want our white girls hanging out with these Chinese guys because they got the opium. So you criminalize a lifestyle. You criminalize, like, in the U.S. it's totally normal. Caffeine is totally normal. Alcohol today is part of our culture. It's built into the system. Well, there were cultures where peyote was part of the culture. There were cultures where opium was part of the culture. You know, I know, again, it's hard for you to get it in your context, but it existed. People could function, okay, and they would have problems, but the same, no more or less than the problems that we have with alcohol and people today, how some are alcoholics. Okay, you had some people back then who were addicted to opium. There was no reason to ban it, you know, no reason. So, point is, the societal ills that are tied into drugs, most of them, not all of them, most of them go away if you legalize, tax, and regulate drugs. And I can guarantee you, one that goes away is cocaine that fucking has a chemical link to bladder cancer, and cocaine that gets your skin to rot off. It rots human flesh. This kind of cocaine would not exist anymore if it was actually legal and regulated. Okay. All right, let's go to Donald Trump here. How much time I got left? I still got 20 minutes of that? Yeah, still got some good time here. I don't want to run out on you guys. Donald Trump briefly spoke at a black church while visiting Flint, Michigan, and the pastor apparently wasn't having any of it.
Hillary failed on the economy, just like she's failed on foreign policy. Everything she touched didn't work out. Nothing. Now Hillary Clinton.
Mr. Trump, I invited you here to thank us for what
we've done. Oh, okay.
Not
okay.
To give a political speech.
Okay, that's good. And I'm going to go back on that. Okay. Okay. Flint's pain is a result of so many different failures, and I must say that, no, I never would. And frankly, Time Magazine, as you know, they reported this year that the federal government, they've got a long way to go to bring Flint back. And I look at the damage done, and the damage can be taken care of. Thank you, Pastor.
So, when I first saw the headlines, I actually was thinking, I might have to defend Trump on this. Because you're running for president, and people are mad that you're making a political speech? But that's kind of the point of running for president. So that was my initial reaction. Then I watched the video, and then it dawned on me that, no, I'm convinced that he spoke to them beforehand and said, look, let me, you know, I'll say some comments, some brief comments, and I guess like she said, I'm going to thank you for doing the work that you're doing in terms of charity and helping people, so on and so forth. So he probably told them behind the scenes, let me just say some brief words, and it won't be political, and I'll just bring up, you know, the great work you're doing, and we need to address this problem, yada, yada. But then he goes up there and he's like, all right, crooked Hillary Clinton, her foreign policy, disastrous. Her economic policy, disastrous. Believe me, let me just tell you, sad, sad. And then she comes out there and she's like, hey, Slapstick, I didn't say you could say this in my church. What are you doing? In fact, you said you'd come up here and just thank us for doing all the work that we're doing. So what are you doing? And then here's how I know that he did make a deal with them behind the scenes that he wasn't going to talk about this stuff. Look how quickly he backs down. Look at that. He's like, oh, no, totally, no. I wasn't doing anything, bro. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, yeah, like I was saying, Flint. Oh, Flint. We got to help Flint. I didn't say anything about Hillary Clinton. We got to help Flint. So that was awesome to see Trump finally put in his place by somebody. But also, I have to admit, though I despise Trump, though I do think he's worse than Hillary for a variety of reasons. Hey, I'm going to bring back torture. Hey, I want to kill civilians. You know, hey, climate change is a Chinese hoax. Don't need to get into that. But when it comes to the stuff he was saying, when you read the transcript, because that's only a little portion of the clip, he actually says things that are kind of true. So he says, yeah, Hillary Clinton supported NAFTA. Yeah, she did. NAFTA destroyed specifically this community and these communities around here in Flint, Michigan. Totally true. Totally true. You know, he goes on about her economic policy, terrible foreign policy, invading Iraq, yada, yada, terrible. Yeah, kind of right about all that stuff. So while it is good to see somebody put Trump in his place, also bear in mind, this is a rare instance where he's up there saying things that are accurate. So that should be noted for the record. So Donald Trump recently proposed paid family leave, which bucks the GOP establishment and what they want, and his surrogate Steve King is going to go on CNN to discuss this issue here. But there's one group of people he's really annoyed Trump may include in his paid family leave deal. So he does not want the tax credit to apply to gays. Here's the ensuing conversation.
When you say encourage families, more babies and all that, would you include the LGBT community in that in terms of families to encourage having kids and expanding them? Obviously, Mike Pence, as the Indiana governor and running mate, may weigh in on that decision. Would you be open to this meeting all families?
I want to respect all people, but I want to promote the natural family, Chris, and I think that's the most wholesome thing that we can do. And
what is the, what's the natural family? What's the natural
family
in your opinion?
Is a man or woman joined together, hopefully in holy matrimony, blessed by God with children.
But you do know that even on a scientific level, when we look at social research, they're finding out more and more that babies adopted in to LGBT families are doing just as well, if not better, than what you call a natural family. What does that suggest to you?
I think I'd need to look a little further into some of that research. And, you know, we got down the global warming argument and found out there was another side to that equation, too. So, no, I'm not looking at that research. I would want to look at it. And as I say, I want to respect all human persons. We're all gifts from God. But I want to encourage the natural family. That's the best and most wholesome way to raise a child. And that's been the case for, throughout thousands of years of human history. And I think we need to go with the things we know work.
Right. But we know that what works is loving the kid, giving them the attention, giving them the time. There is no reason to believe that you have to have a man and a woman to do that. And if we see anything with the breakdown of the family, the man and the woman thing has its own shortfalls, right? Look at the divorce rate. Look at single-parent families. Look at all the destruction of children and family welfare in this country. It doesn't seem like a sure thing. Why not encourage anything that gets a child loved and provided for?
Chris, I just don't think it's true that there's no reason to believe that a child needs a man and a woman to raise them. A child needs a father and a mother
to
raise
them. No, I didn't
say
there's no reason to believe it. I'm saying there's plenty of reason to believe it's not the only way it can be done well. That's what I'm saying.
I say the evidence is very heavy on the other side of this thing. To have a role model as a man in the home, to have a role model as a woman in the home, especially a role model of a father and a mother that are joined together and working together in a team, that is the best way that we can hope that all children are raised.
He's like a broken record. Chris Cuomo was like, okay, no, but the actual science and the studies show that kids do just as well with gay parents as they do with straight parents. And actually, he's being a little too kind there, because I think it was the research from Australia that found that kids raised in gay households actually did better. They fared better than kids raised in straight households. So if we use their logic, what would we say? I guess you gotta ban straight marriage? You gotta ban straight marriage. You gotta ban straight. Hey, do you care about the kids? I guess you don't care about the kids, because if they grow up with straight parents, they're in trouble and they do worse. I guess you want kids to do worse. Why are you so anti-kid? Ban straight marriage, only allow gay marriage. But see, we wouldn't do that because we're not stupid people. But they do that. They do the reverse of that. So what do they say? Well, I don't want these gay people having kids and raising kids because it'll be detrimental to them. Except, again, the studies show the opposite. But Steve King's like a broken record. When Chris Cuomo corrects him, he just reiterates what he said. He's like, okay, no, dipshit, let it land. I just corrected you. It's not true that they don't do well with gay parents. They do well. He's like, okay, yeah, but then they don't do well with gay parents, though. I just told you they did well. What are you talking about, based on the science? I don't know. Well, you know, global warming, climate change. We learned there's another side to that. No. No, we didn't. You think you did, because you read fucking ExxonMobil talking points published on a bullshit far-right website like WorldNet Daily. Debunked, and then the very next article, debunked evolution, so you think you have a counter-argument, you don't have a fucking counter-argument, but I got good news for you. Steve King is a dying breed of Republican, and he's just a dying breed in America. You know, look, there was a time when, in the U.S., interracial marriage was banned. I forget the number, in the 50s, or it might have even been in the 60s. It was like 4% of the population that approved of interracial marriage. Seriously, stop and think about that. In single digits, not that long ago, probably in a time frame where your parents, certainly your grandparents, were alive. Single digit approval for interracial marriage. Today you talk to people, 87% approval. Which again is kind of crazy that still 12% are like, I don't approve. We don't like to interbreed around these parts. But 87%, look at that difference over the years. And now those people even know, most of them, if they're against it, it's not socially acceptable for me to be against it. I can't say that. It's going to be the same thing with gay marriage. Of course it's going to be. It already is taking hold. And look at how they're moving the goalposts. So it used to be we're against gay marriage. And they still, some believe that, but it's harder to say that now because we actually have gay marriage. Then it was, you know, gays shouldn't be allowed to adopt. Now, Steve King has been pushed all the way into the corner of, I guess they can adopt, but I don't want them to get the same tax credits as everybody else. So you see how the progress has beaten back the barbarians to the point where they're like, oh, God, I think we're going to lose on this one too. I want to see that kind of advancement on all the different issues. And then the most hilarious thing to me is always the argument of, like, if you if you speak to the people who today still are against, interracial marriage, if you can get them to admit that, you know what they'll say, right? I'm not racist, but I'm against interracial marriage. No, that is racist. That is by definition racist. If you say, not, hey, I don't want to get married to somebody of a different race because maybe you're just not interested
and people of the other right. That's whatever. But if you say, I want to ban other people from interracial marriages, yeah, that's fucking racist. Of course that's racist. So, yes, when people say, I'm not homophobic, but I'm against gay marriage. Okay, no, that logic, it should be the same thing as the interracial thing. Like, okay, no, I'm not anti-gay, but I don't want them to have the same rights. That would be kind of the definition of being anti-gay. Now, there are variations. You could be some sort of Muslim fundamentalist in Saudi Arabia and want to kill them. Granted, way worse anti-gayness and homophobia, but that doesn't excuse your softer bigotry. Well, what do you mean? I just don't want them to get married, so that's cool. No, neither one is cool. That's worse, the Muslim fundamentalism in Saudi Arabia, but yours is not okay. So we keep pushing back against the bigotry, and it's a good thing. And this kind of stuff, it's not going to fly much longer, man. I'm telling you, in 10 years, 15 years, people look back at this clip of him saying that and go, I can't believe people used to say that in public, because it's going to be just as distasteful and absurd and stupid as somebody arguing on TV, you know, I just don't want to interbreed. This interbreeding is messing up the purity of the white race. By the way, I'm not racist. Okay. All right, one or two more for you. Probably just one more. We'll see. We had an unfortunate situation unfold in Georgia this week. David Ferguson reports here. A meeting about whether to lift a moratorium on the construction of a mosque in an Atlanta suburb was canceled on Tuesday after a video made by right-wing militia members led to fears of armed violence. According to NBC News, officials in Covington, Georgia, canceled a city planning meeting dedicated to voting on whether to proceed with the construction of a new mosque and Muslim cemetery in the town. Chris Hill, leader of the local militia group, the 3% Security Force, told reporters that he made the video during a weekend protest against the mosque. Okay, now, we've seen this, unfortunately, in many places. Tennessee, it's happened. Places in Texas, it's happened, where people just say, we effectively want to ban mosques. No more mosques. Well, look, that, call it what it is, that is against religious freedom, which is in the Constitution. It's not like, you know, you're banning a Muslim from taking away the rights of somebody else in this instance. If it came to that, believe me, I'd be on your side. If a Muslim says it's my right to, you know, treat my wife as a second-class citizen, I say, no, that's not your right. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about just building a house of worship. I mean, that's kind of, you know, a very American thing to be allowed to freely practice your religion, whether it be Mormonism, whether it be Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam. Look, I'm against all of the religions. I think they're all factually incorrect. And I will explain to people why I think they're wrong. But I would never force people at the barrel of a gun, you're not allowed to practice said religion if the practicing of that religion is not taking away the rights of other people. And in this case, it's not. They're just saying we just want to build a mosque and have a cemetery. So you can't be against that, but wait for it. We're not dealing with the most rational people here. So let me go ahead and give you what Chris Hill, again, the leader of this militia that threatened people, let me give you what his painfully stupid quote is. He said, right over there, this is going to be a future ISIS training group. This is where you're going to see terrorism taking hold in Newton County. It's tied to terrorism, everything from 9/11 to the Boston bombings to the Fort Hood shootings to the coup of Turkey. It's all connected. Okay, let me pause. Does this guy, who also, for the record, in the video goes by the name Blood Agent, I care about peace and that's why I'm against these Muslims. Call me Blood Agent. Please, I'd appreciate that. I'm not violent. They're violent, but call me Blood Agent. And by the way, I'm threatening people. If you build that mosque, I might shoot you. Okay, So then he also goes on to say this, quote, as an American, I have a right to defend myself. As a Marine, I have a right and a duty to defend our country and our Constitution. Okay, think about how stupid that is. You say you're defending the Constitution as you're literally doing the opposite. I mean, you're blocking the creation of a house of worship. That means you're against freedom of religion when it's a religion you don't approve of. That's against the Constitution. That is clearly against the Constitution. And for the record, not that this should even need to be said, it should be relatively obvious. No, this group of Muslims in fucking Georgia are not pro-ISIS. They are not ISIS. It's not a training ground. They're not in favor of 9/11 and out there every day going, let's kill all the white people and the Christians. They're not doing it. They're not fucking doing it. They're not doing it. You made it up. So this leads to the main point. Oftentimes, you know, people mock the idea that you may come out there and say, hey, you shouldn't blame all Muslims for the actions of ISIS. And, you know, it's a thing, ha, 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 like as if it's like a stale response that's nowhere near true. Okay, what's the logical response to these idiots? Well, that is the exact logical response to these idiots. Now, you may be smart enough to know I'm not going to blame all Muslims, but yes, fundamentalist Islam is a problem. You may be smart enough to say that. Not everybody is smart enough to say that. There are genuine far-right-wing bigots that exist who really do blame all Muslims for ISIS. How do I know? A random mosque in Georgia, they're blocking the creation, unconstitutional, and then they're also saying it's going to be an ISIS training camp, I know it. But you don't know it because you made it up, and any mosque, it could be an Ahmadiyya mosque, it could be a Sufi mosque, it could be a Shia mosque, it could be any mosque. They say, ISIS. These are the same jackasses who attack Sikhs and Hindus and call him Osama bin Laden. So, yes, saying not all sometimes is an important thing to say. Yes, sometimes people over-invoke that, and they say they object to not all when somebody's not actually blaming all. This is not an instance like that. These are far-right-wing bigots who really do look at any and all Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs and go, they got kind of brownish skin in this case, and they're wearing a funky hat, so let me unconstitutionally ban their house of worship and say they're ISIS. They're not ISIS, and in this instance, they're not the problem. You're the fucking problem. You're the one with the guns. You're the one threatening violence, Mr. Blood Agent, and you're the one acting unconstitutionally. So in this instance, tell me again who the extremists are. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. Peace.